Welcome to Joy Connection, your journey to well-balanced living podcast series. Please welcome your host, Ralph Weaver.
Hi, I'm Ralph Weaver, and welcome to EWC Joy Connection, Journey to Well-Balanced Living. Thank you for being here. We've always said the goal of our podcast is to not only inspire and teach others, but to share the joy. And what better way to do that than to introduce today's guest? Chef Annie Pritzi proudly showcases her joy of cooking and has manifested that passion into an amazing career. She is a graduate of the prestigious Culinary Institute of America program at Cornell University's Management Hotel and Restaurant Master's program. Chef Annie honed her art as an apprentice to the legendary Simone Beck, a Cordon Bleu alum who co-authored Mastering the Art of French Cooking with Julia Child. A highlight of Chef Annie's resume is her 17-year tenure at New York City's Windows on the World and the restaurant's famed Cellar in the Sky, which she helped conceive and eventually worked at full time. Also in New York City, she helped launch and then taught at Peter Kump's well-respected Institute of Culinary Education. With Peter Kump, she traveled throughout the United States, including to the Watergate Hotel, to help Jean-Louis Paladin prepare Julia Child's birthday dinner in 1985. And when the Algonquin Hotel underwent a multi-million dollar renovation and reopening, Chef Annie was charged with developing the hotel's new culinary concept and menu. She refined her epicurean talents at Costa Rica, where her restaurant, Annie's Bistro, on Costa Rica's Flamingo Coast, became one of the country's most desirable dining venues. After relocating to Southwest Florida, Chef Annie founded Pure Life Kitchen, dedicated to leading the way in exploration, discovery, and celebration of locally grown, healthy, and sustainable food. And I must say, I've had the personal pleasure of enjoying her delicious meals in my home. Throughout her career, Chef Annie has earned several awards, including the James Beard Foundation's Outstanding Education Achievement. Furthermore, Chef Annie Pritzi is the author of Southern Italian Cooking, a compilation of recipes she learned while growing up in the kitchens of her two Sicilian grandmothers. From her grandmothers, she learned scratch cooking from the heart, a time-honored culinary principle that serves as her motto to the present day. Please welcome our guest, Chef Annie Pritzi.
Hello, how are you?
We're glad to have you today.
I'm thrilled to be here.
I must tell our listeners, I've been spoiled by the fact that Chef Annie has prepared some incredible meals for me over the past couple years. And each one is more delicious than the next.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I wanted to share with you that yesterday was Julia Child's birthday.
Oh,
so it's just ironic that we picked today to do this, you know. And so I am kind of where I was in 1985. I'm back there today. So that's exciting for me, talking about food.
Well, tell us, we'll start there. Well, tell us what Julia Child meant to you and how she inspired you.
She was my inspiration. I get home from school every day, couldn't wait to put the TV on and watch her show. My mom used to allow me once a month to make a shopping list and take me shopping and prepare one of her meals that she had done during the week. And of course, my grandmothers, they were always in the kitchen and I spent a lot of time with them. So I got the heart and the soul of food from, I think, my grandparents, but my passion came from Julia Child. She was an amazing mentor. She was an amazing teacher. And I think all chefs are teachers. I think that that's our first priority, is to teach and mentor.
So when you were a youngster, did you realize that you had that talent? I know you had an interest, but what did your family say about your cooking in comparison to the wonderful meals your grandmothers were making? What did they say? How did you measure up?
Oh, well, I think that as a child, I stood next to my grandmothers in the kitchen, of course, and it was always their recipes and, you know, their passion. When I started going to culinary school, it was a little difficult because first my parents thought that it was going to be a horrible career because I'd be in a kitchen cooking for the rest of my life. And at that time in the 70s and early 80s, chefs weren't paid like they are today. We worked 16, 17 hour days, and very little recognition. Joe Baum, Windows on the World, kind of changed that for the United States, because he brought all those passionate people to one place, and we all were able to experience. We were able to let people experience what our passion was. He gave us freedom in the kitchen to do anything we wanted to do, and most of it was French based. So my family was not crazy about the fact that I was cooking French food, but I still till today do my favorite dishes that are Southern Italian, mostly Sicilian recipes when we are eating as a family.
And I'm curious, when you mentioned the late 70s and 80s, mm-hmm. I would assume that your profession was male dominated, or?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why Peter Kump and Joe Baum were the two people who idolized Simone Beck and Julia Child. And they kept them. Peter Kump had had his school, and every summer he brought students on scholarship to study with her. To study with Simone Beck and Julia Child. I took advantage of that when I was a very young chef. I did that. The kitchen is a lot different when there are two women in the kitchen rather than one stern German or French chef. So it was very male dominated. We as women were supposed to do pastries. We were pastry chefs. That's all we could do. That's all we should do. And I fought my way to the top. I wanted to do whole food, and I did.
So tell us a little bit about that experience in terms of fighting to get to the top and be respected by your peers when you were working with legendary Simone Beck. Did she see something in you, or what is it? What was different about you that made you rise to the top in your field?
Well, I was never cocky in the kitchen. I was never I was taught first day in culinary school, I was taught that the ego has to be left at the door. And so in my class, there were only three women and there were 23 men. Well, at the end of our tenure there, I went to study with Simone Beck, and there were only four men left, and all three of us women were left. So that'll just show you that the attitudes needed to change. A lot of male chefs are fabulous, and they're self-trained. For some reason, see, I knew I had to get a degree if I was going to make it. And I think as a man, if you just studied under a chef at maybe Four Seasons or Windows or something like that, you didn't really have to get that education. You were accepted into the kitchen. as a female, I needed that piece of paper.
So I know you talked about being one of the highlights being the birthday dinner for Julia Child in 1985.
Right.
So what was that like?
Amazing. And it was myself and Chef Jean-Paul, who unfortunately passed on 9/11/2001, but he passed from cancer in Paris. He didn't die at the World Trade Center, but it's amazing that that happened that day. And Chef Jean had contacted me at Windows and said that he wanted to do a dinner. He was asked to do her dinner, her birthday, and it was her 85th birthday. And he said she had mentioned a young chef she knew and she met, and would I be interested in doing the dinner with him at the James Beard House? Well, that was, God forbid, I could have died that day and I would have been, that everything would have been accomplished. And yes, so he came to New York from Washington, D.C. We did the menus, over the top, fabulous menus. And we cooked together with two of his German sous chefs who were absolutely amazing. We were all much younger than Chef Jean-Paul, but he was amazing. He was an amazing man. And so we watched them. They all filed in. Julia came into the kitchen and gave us all a hug. And it was amazing and wonderful. And it's something that that gave me the confidence to go to Costa Rica in 1993 to do the things I wanted to do, because I knew that I could. And I knew my food and my personality and my love of food and people all went together, and I was successful.
Well, tell us a little bit about going to Costa Rica. What did you do?
Well, there was the first World Trade Center attack, and I was in the building that day. So that was the end of my career at Windows. And so my husband and I talked about it, and we had some property in Costa Rica, and on the property sat a quite large home with a lot of bathrooms. And we decided that at that point we were going to go there and do a bed and breakfast. And we opened the bed and breakfast and a small Italian bistro April 15th of that year. And it was quite successful. It was an amazing journey because I understood just then what the passion of sustainability was. And I saw people eat wonderful food just that they grew, or that the local restaurant grew, and fish, we'd go fishing. The fishermen would come into the dock, and we'd go down to the dock and we'd pick our fish for the day and get it back to the restaurant, clean it. It was an amazing, amazing experience. Really, really was.
And how long did you have the restaurant?
6 years.
6 years. Okay.
Yeah. And it was hard leaving, but it was time. I still have my family in New Jersey at the time. And my nieces and nephews were getting big, and I was missing all the good stuff. So we came home, and then I met Jim Weaver, who's another fabulous chef in New Jersey. And Jim and I brought to the New Jersey area Slow Food USA, which I became very, very involved with, which was, it's still around, and it's still an amazing concept. And the thing I loved about that was that you didn't have to be a chef to be part of Slow Food USA. You could have been a foodie, you, Ralph, being the person you are and loving the food the way you do, you could have been part of that. And we kind of opened up a world of cheeses and specialty foods and caviar and things like this to everyone. And things that usually in USA we didn't have, unless you ate at a place like Windows on the World. So it was a great time for me then. And then I started teaching, and I never looked back. I love teaching.
Well, it seems like you've always had your finger on the pulse. You mentioned sustainability, healthy eating, some of the trends. How do you stay ahead of the curve and what's happening on the food scene at that time and even today?
Well, it was hard coming back to the States because the sustainability was not all that important to a lot of chefs. It was just putting out the best dish you could, or, you know, and getting the products from anywhere, flying products in. And, you know, that kind of takes away from what's really sustainable and what's really not. It also, sustainability has to do with also overproducing, overfishing the waters. So if here in Florida, if we sold all the grouper that we sold, that we caught, there would be no grouper for the local restaurant. So it's kind of hard to most of it is about waste. How do we make it better? How do we make our life easier, more sustainable? And that's not buying from, that would be, you don't buy from New York if you're living in Florida. And that's why I chose the recipe that I chose, because I had to tweak the recipe because locally I couldn't get certain things that go into that recipe because it's too hot in Florida for certain things to be sold or to be caught.
Tell us about the recipe. What is it? And I'm anxious to make it and taste it.
This would be one of your favorites.
Okay.
So I did a chiapino. And chiapino is a fish stew. I want to say it's a fish stew. It's got fennel in it. It's got shallots, garlic, and tomatoes. That's your base sauce. You need some lemon zest in there and all that. You make your sauce separate. And then it would be the fish that you serve should be fish that's fresh and caught locally. So what I chose, I couldn't get clams, and I'll tell you why. I couldn't get clams because the water here in Florida is too warm, too hot. And they actually come from up around Pensacola when it's this time of year, but by the time the fresh clam would get to me, it probably would be a little iffy. If, you know, it's not as fresh as coming out of the water in January or February down here from the Gulf. So I got mussels that are local. I've got grouper that is local. I've got Gulf shrimp, which is one of your favorites, that's local. Local sea scallop, and we did warm water lobster tail that comes from the Gulf. And when I say it comes from the Gulf, it's not 100 miles within my radius, which is what sustainability should be, but it comes from the cold water of the Gulf. But that's according to sustainability. I'm not overusing product. There's plenty available to get that. So I chose this recipe. And of course, it's over some fresh pasta. I chose the recipe because it's still wonderful. It's still delicious. It's got all the components it needs. The basil was grown in my garden, the fennel grown in my garden, the garlic, buffalo garlic in my garden. So most of the things I was able to use are here. And I was able to go to my fresh fishmonger, and I told him what I was doing. And he said, okay, let's just do a local feast. And he picked everything for me and got home yesterday and refrigerated everything. And this morning I got up at early and put the dish together, and it's in my fridge and waiting for me to eat it tonight. But it's just, it makes me feel good to know that I have given, I've supported my local fishermen. I've supported my local markets. I have the best dish I could possibly have made on a plate, and it's safe. And it's safe.
Well, it sounds wonderful and delicious. I wish I was there to experience it with you. But I guess the one question that I have is that, and I know we're going to post the recipe for our listeners yes. to try at home, but you're just a celebrated chef. So mm-hmm. what about, say, the novice or that person that says, I can only boil water? How can you make the cooking experience not so intimidating that others can, you know, say someone that's a beginner or more advanced uh-huh. person cook?
Again, it's passion. Again, it's going in that, getting in the kitchen with a person who doesn't have the confidence, and everybody can learn to cook, anybody. A lot of people just don't like to be in the kitchen, and I get that. But for young people going into a new profession now, there are a lot of opportunities to have your own business, and you have to share your passion. You have to make it fun. And you have to make sure that you're constantly, I constantly learned from my students. Sometimes they didn't want to do the recipe the way it should have been done. So I'd let them be creative, just like Joe Baum let me be creative. And they've sometimes given me very good ideas. And I've followed my path with those ideas. So I think it's just embracing the person and sharing the passion. It's like anything else. If you're passionate about it, people will pick up on that.
And I just wanted to go back to your comments about working with the local fish store uh-huh. to select the fish and some of the other ingredients for your meals. What guidance would you have to our listeners about what they should do if, you know, to ensure that they're getting the freshest and the best foods? What guidance would you give them?
I would tell them to first get to know your community and get to know where you buy your food. There are local farms now everywhere. And go into your farmer's market on a Thursday or a Saturday, probably the best idea you could do, because you're going to meet the people who are feeding the community. And we're also giving back. I mean, those people are fishing all week. They are shrimping all week. The meat people have these ranches that it's very hard to produce beef in Florida, but it's done. I would say your local farmers market is the best place to start, and then from there get to know the people and visit them at their place of business. Even Griggstown Farm in New Jersey, it's a quail farm, just absolutely amazing what they do there. And you know, people, it's a shame. When I was in Jersey, we did a field trip 3 times a semester to bring them to all different local farms. And the kids, these kids that were growing up in New Jersey that didn't live far from the farm had no idea this was going on. So we have to keep those people in business or we'll have nothing.
As society has evolved over the years, and you know, I grew up in a family of farmers. My grandparents were farmers. Uh-huh. But today, I mean, I know when you said your garden, are you encouraging people to say plant that zucchini or plant?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think the only good thing, if anything good did come out of this pandemic, was that people did turn to things like baking bread and planting a garden. and they've kept it up. They've kept it up. People are more aware now. There's a whole lot of community gardens, even in the East Village, for God's sakes. They have, you know, they have a raised bed garden that's absolutely magnificent. And those people, all of those farmers who aren't, they're people who work 9 to 5 Monday to Friday, and they go down every evening, and they are at the farmers market at Union Square every Saturday. And that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about even if you are going to take a trip somewhere. I took a trip to Saratoga Springs a few weeks ago, and on Saturday we went to 3 farmers markets. That was on my bucket list because I wanted, and I've met the cheesemaker and I met the dairy guy. It was so fabulous. My friend who's lived there for 37 years, she didn't even know that these places existed. So that's, you understand, you know, that's what I want our world to be. I want us to embrace what is it that we all have, or what is it that we all need? And we all need family. We all need to be together. We all need to eat. And I think it's my opinion, there's nothing better than doing a garden together, going and picking the garden when it's ready, and enjoying that with your family, and then sitting down and having a meal together. It's just, for me, that's the perfect life.
Oh, sounds wonderful.
Yes.
I guess when I think about, some of our listeners may say, you know, food costs are continuing to rise. How do you then stay within your budget when you're, say, buying organic, or some of the options, or sometimes the whole sustainability and buying organic? People say, well, wait a minute, the costs are more than what I could get at my local supermarket that may be having a special on something. How would you respond to that?
Well, the prices are the way they are because people have stopped doing local. Just for instance, I'll just give you a for instance, and the people that maybe will understand this, Detweilers in Florida. Those are local farmers. They're Amish, local Amish farmers, ranchers, dairy people that have been here for many, many, many years. And you go into one of their markets, and their markets looks like you're shopping outside. I mean, they're not beautiful. There's no chandeliers hanging, but you know that when I go there, if I can't get escarole, it's because it's not in season. So then you can use kale. There are certain, you know, that you have to do your homework, I guess. Educate yourself on what your local markets look like and what's there. The prices compared, if you go into Publix and you're buying a piece of fish from Thailand, the price is going to be, of course, insane because there's fuel that's involved. There's transportation that's involved. There's also a question in your head that says, is this really the best fish? What water does it come out of? You know, if we just started just keeping ourselves basic, I'd say food menus are very important for families, even for young kids in college or, you know, on their own, setting up their first home. Make yourself a menu. Make yourself a menu. Do your shopping. Do your budgets. Just stop buying things that are not local.
Okay, and that's a very good point. And I want to couple that with another thought that mm-hmm. you go with food labeling being so complex today when you're mm-hmm. trying to eat healthy. What guidance would you give to people as they go to their to the farmer's market, or if they go to their local supermarket, to be an informed consumer about what they're placing in their bodies?
Oh, good question. And this is something that I've talked about quite a bit to my students. This is why it's so important. I think we travel a lot too. When you travel, get to know, if you go to Mexico, if you go to the farm, go to see what people do. Unfortunately, outside of our culture here in the United States, there's a lot of spraying that goes on here, which is not good. You don't ever want anything that's sprayed, and you have to. That's another thing where do it yourself or have a neighborhood farm or something like this. But if you have to think about the other ways people farm. And if there's not a local bathroom or five bathrooms for the migrant worker to be out there picking the avocados and all of this, be logical. I know it sounds horrible, but you have to think about why we get E. coli. Why are things always recalled? Because they're being grown in places that aren't sanitary. So that's why when you drive through the farmland of New Jersey, that's exquisite, or upstate New York, that's exquisite, you see that these people have done this all their life, that they're doing the best they can. But it's a different story when something's coming from Tijuana, Mexico, or Mexico City, or Guatemala. You have to be careful and just know what you're putting in your body. Because we have scares every day, and we have the ability as a chef. I used to tell my students this all the time. You have the ability to kill people. So you better make sure you know what you're putting on that plate.
Well, earlier you talked about the passion for cooking that you had from a young child to mm-hmm. even today as you teach students and you talk about food to others. But so I'm wondering your feelings of what has occurred in the world of food today, the celebrated chef, the food channel, or channels, I should say, where, everyone is a foodie, or so many people are foodies, they enjoy the food experience. Does that bring you joy to see how your profession has just evolved in just the last 25 years?
I will say this. I wish that a chef's life would be just as you see on Food Network. To be perfectly honest, I think that if I love, my thing is like a symphony, from the beginning till the time the last dessert is plated and the coffee is drunk and everything is perfect. That's when I feel good. But watching Food Network just makes me think that people think they're going to go in a kitchen and you're going to be able to take an hour to make two dishes, and nobody gets dirty and nobody's stressed and there's no time frame. And there aren't 200 people waiting to walk into the door to eat your food. So chefing is a very tough life. Even for your partner or your family, no Christmases together, things like this. But that's why you need the passion. A lot of people, the culinary schools now are full, but they're full of people who will never really work in a substantial kitchen. Fast food has ruined our restaurant world here. And I wish they would show on TV just one show of maybe four chefs getting out a 1500 plate dinner and run it for 3 hours and show what it's really like in that kitchen.
Yeah, that would be intriguing because, yeah. Yeah, yeah. As, Many years ago, I worked in a kitchen, and I just marveled at what those chefs had to go through because they were doing those large meals that you just mentioned, the 1,500 person meals that they were doing day in and day out. It wasn't just one event, but this was their life for, you know, 5 or 6 days a week.
Absolutely.
And so that is tough.
And Ralph, not only that, but remember that 60% or 70% of our job is ordering that food, is putting that food in the, what you know. I mean, if anybody has worked in restaurants, they, you see that truck come and it's like, oh no, you know, I mean, the trucks will be lined up outside the restaurants at 5:30 in the morning. Chefs are in there. First thing we're doing is checking in all of our stuff, checking to make sure the fish is fresh, checking to make sure that the produce is fresh, getting everything put away. And, you know, nobody knows what the office work is like as a chef. And that's not the pretty part, but it's a big part of what we do. We have to watch our numbers, especially now. People, I read restaurant reviews constantly, and it's heartbreaking. People are blaming the restaurant for the smaller portion and the up in, you know, the price, the up scale of price. But the price is the price because fuel is up, everything's up. You know, our truck drivers have to get paid. You know, you can't pay someone $10 an hour to drive 15 hours a day. That's just unheard of. So you have to think of the whole, and that, I kind of love that part of what I do. A lot of chefs don't. That's why they like a sous chef, because the sous chef will do the ordering and the inventories and all of this. But I like that part because it keeps me on the ball of what's coming, what's new, what's exciting, you know?
Well, what would you tell our listeners, what is it that they can do to support their local restaurants, their local farmers? What is it that they can do?
Farmers, local farmers, again, would be the farmers markets. Go visit your farmers market, find out where these people are and visit them on site. Everyone loves for you to go to see them work. For our restaurants, I think, and I try to do this, if I'm not going to eat out in restaurants, which I really have not been doing much of lately, I do support restaurants where I'll call and pick up and take something home, just because we want them to, the wait staffs aren't making money. Nobody's making money. And this is why restaurants are, they can't hire people. People don't want to, I mean, if they go to McDonald's, you know, you're 18 years old, you go to McDonald's, they're paying you $17 an hour. There is no way a five-star restaurant can afford to do that with 13 or 14 chefs. So you have to support people by going and make it an event, maybe three couples or the girls' night out, you know, girls' night out, pick a place. And just here, and this is what I've done with my sisters lately when we all get together with my mom, is we order maybe five things on the menu and we split everything. So a lot of times it's two appetizers, two entrees, and a dessert. And then everyone tastes everything. You know, you don't, I mean, you can't go out and spend $400 for two people to eat anymore. It's just unheard of.
Well, and I guess I want to get back to the topic of just passion, because your passion for cooking, for food, it comes across in all that you're saying. But tell us, what do you do to just sustain that passion at this point in your life? How do you still stay excited and find the joy and the excitement of what it is that you do?
Well, I have my tight-knit group of chefs that I've known forever that we all stay in touch. I have a nephew who now is a chef, graduated culinary school, and is working at a country club. in Jersey. And he's, when he comes to visit me, we cook and, you know, he's got the passion. So we get in the kitchen and cook together. And it's something that is like, even my nieces would, when I, they would come to my home for a weekend, and that would be our big thing, was going, I take them, we were in Jersey then, I take them downtown Manhattan, we do the Union Square Farmers Market, we do shopping, we go home on the train, it was fabulous, and then we cook and everything for the whole day Saturday, and then the whole family would come Sunday, you know, my dad, my mom, my sisters, and they had that passion. They loved it, but not for a job. They loved it. For them, it's part of Aunt Anne's life. And that's what they enjoy doing with me. You know, I'm not taking them skiing, but I'll take them to the farmer's market and we'll go home and we'll cook. That's the passion that I continue to have. It's a passion that I love. I never want to lose it. And I refuse to lose it. So I don't want to hear, I don't like when people start talking about that it's not what it was, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's because something has changed, and it's not the food that's changed, it's the person that's changed.
Well, you know, I could go on and on in talking with you, but one of the things that we end our discussion, we call it a segment, The Shift to Joy, and you've already answered that question. What is it that you can do? What is it that you do to bring joy to yourself, to those that you love, and how you celebrate life each and every day?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I think that's so important. But before we go, I just want you also to just mention the recipe that people can go on our website to get information. So if you just tell us one more teaser about that recipe, that I think you're going to have all our listeners running out.
I hope so. So it's the Chiapino, and I'm calling it Southwest Florida Chiapino, and in parentheses August, so that we know what month it is, because if it was June I could have had clams, you know. So I'm going to give what I've done is, the recipe is what I've done. I've also sent they'll probably be up on the website. We have pictures of each thing that I did. So I'm going to, you know, I did still photos of the whole recipe as I was doing it. So you'll see it from the time I got back from my market yesterday until we plated it late this morning. So that'll be another helper for you guys. I'll also give you variation menu of what you can do if you live in the Northeast with this, because that's really where Chiapino can be made to the extreme, because everything is local now up there. Everything. Yeah, that's what I would ask everyone, and anybody who's listening, and I hope we have a lot of people listening, I would like to get feedback on what they think of the recipe.
Okay, great. Well, we'll make that. Sure we ask our listeners for that. Well, it's been a pleasure having you. Thank you, Chef Andy.
You're welcome.
For taking the time today. And I just think of that title, you know, from the, I guess it was the 70s, the Joy of Cooking.
And that's yes, of course.
Yeah, you truly personified that. And it's,
thank you.
It's obvious that you're committed to creating fresh seasonal meals that are good for people. But when you mentioned family, bringing people together, supporting the farmers, there's so many things that you've said that I think if we take the time and do that, it will make a difference in our life. So thank you for sharing this joy.
Thank you for having me.
Story with us today. So here's to a wonderful meal that I hope all of our listeners will have today, because they've been inspired by you.
Absolutely. And you take care of yourself. Stay healthy, be well, and eat to live.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.